You know why? Because they did everything right. They, there was nothing automated.
You shouldn't use that.
No, I'm short.
Okay, I'll send them over.
Yeah, okay, so. Is anyone missing on this side of the room?
Besides me,
I can share.
I have, so just say
share.
Okay. Well, who doesn't have? I don't mind sharing.
Okay.
It's fine.
I'll take one. Sure, if someone share. Or we can make more copies.
Oh, wait, here's another one. Sorry. Got lost in there. Okay. Good morning, everybody. Lauren made it sound like she really had to convince me to come. She really didn't. I had to convince myself that I could come. I knew I wanted to come, and I was having a hard time saying no because I love coming here and I love doing this. And I was just afraid to commit myself when before I really knew exactly what I was doing with myself. I still don't know what I'm doing with myself, but so I compromised with myself. The compromise wasn't with Lauren. The compromise was with myself, that I was telling myself, I can do this. It's okay. Forget everything else. For 3 days, I'm going to do nothing about packing or moving or the 4,000 other things on my to-do list because this was time off for me. This was my me time to come here and spend my morning with you doing something that I really, really love doing and enjoy doing. And it's actually, besides for me, who was campaigning to come back next year, my kids also said, but we have to come to Ottawa. Oh, so we have a whole, it's a package deal. So let's get started. We are going to dedicate this week's, or the portions of this week's lessons, Torah learning, to Yehuda Pinchas Ben Yitzchak Isaac. And as well, today is the yard site for Peshabas Rabbi Yosef Chaim Avraham, who is the Rosh Hashiva's wife, the first wife of my husband's Rosh Hashiva, whom my son Nochi is named after. So it was brought to my awareness that her yahrzeit is today. They had no children, so we were asked that anyone who gained from her, benefit from her, should, you know, have in mind to do something for her neshama today. As well, I have a lot to be grateful for her because I did not realize that her yard site and my Hebrew anniversary is actually the same day, and she made my shidduch. So really, she's the one who put me and my husband together back 27 years ago. So I'm grateful to her for everything that she did for me and for all the teachings that she taught me and her husband and everything that we gained from her and from the, you know, the yeshiva that they were so great, you know, so much a part of. Okay, so today I was asked to start working on some themes in Sefer Shemos. Sefer Shemos talks about the exile, the slavery of Bnei Israel in Mitzrayim. It talks about the Makos and ultimately the redemption of the Jewish people from Mitzrayim. But we're going to focus on just a few parts and we'll see how far we get. One thing that you probably know about me by now is that I do tend to run off on a tangent. They're not really tangents. They just kind of explode and explode and explode, and all the ripples kind of have these huge ripple effects. So we're probably not going to we'll learn a lot, but we won't get very far in terms of pages in the pasuk. So we're actually not going to get very past like one or two pasukim for today. And we have a lot to do. So basically, the first two makos, the first two plagues, are Dama and Tzvardeya, which are blood and frogs. And what we are going to see on this quote that's on the very first page, it says, Vayomer Hashem el Moshe. Hashem said to Moshe, Emar el Aaron, speak to Aaron, Kach matcha, take your staff, Unite yadcha al meimei Mitzrayim, and stretch out your hands over the waters of Mitzrayim, al Naharasam, over their rivers, al Ya'orehem, vi al Agmehem, vi al Mikvei Meimehem, all over the, you know, all kinds of water sources. Vihu dam, it will be blood. Vahaya dam, bechol eretz Mitzrayim, there will be blood in all of the land of Mitzrayim. uva eitzim, uva avanim, and even any moisture in any wood, any trees, any growing things in the stones will also turn to dam, will turn into blood. And the question that Rashi asks on this pasuk is, why is it that Moshe is being commanded by Hashem to tell Aaron to do this plague, that he is going to be the one to introduce this plague and cause it to start? This is the plague of blood, and we're going to see that for the following plague for frogs as well. And then the third plague, which is Kinim, which is lice, where Moshe has to hit the ground to bring up the lice from the earth, is also not going to be done by him, but rather by Aaron, his brother. So the quote on the bottom is Rashi. It says, Emar el Aaron, say to Aaron, Lefi shehegin hayar al Moshe, because the water, the Nilus, the Nile River, protected Moshe, kishenishlach lesocho, when he was thrown in it, lefichach lo laka al yado. Therefore, Moshe was not able to hit it. The water did not deserve to be hit by Moshe. Lo bedam velo bitzvardaim, not by the plague of blood or frogs, vilaka al yadei Aaron, and instead the water got smitten by Aaron. And there's a very similar Rashi where it talks about Kinim the lice, that because the earth, the ground, protected Moshe, when he hid the officers of Paro that he killed, and he hid them in the ground to protect himself and to protect the Jewish person that was being hit by that overseer, he also could not hit the ground. So what we are going to spin off, what we are going to be focusing on from here, is the Midah, the lesson of Hakaras HaTov. Hakaras HaTov is recognizing the good that others have done for you, having gratitude. And it does seem a little bit bizarre at first glance, because not having gratitude is not bizarre, but having gratitude for water, having gratitude for sand, it's inanimate. There is nothing about the water, there was nothing about the sand that made it decide to do a favor for Moshe. It was never asked to do anything. It was not even acting upon something. It was something that was done to it by Moshe himself, or by Moshe's mother, put him into the water. There was nothing that the water or the ground was actively involved in. So we're going to focus a little bit on that. And then, of course, what we're going to see is that the training that Moshe was getting here was not only for the water, but it was for himself. It was for us to learn a lesson, for him to recognize that regardless of what it was that served you, regardless of what benefit or who you got the benefit from, certainly we owe a debt of gratitude for an animate object, for somebody who is alive or somebody who benefited us in some degree. And we are going to take that off into many different forms. We are going to see how far the depths of gratitude are. We are going to see different people who express their gratitude for different things, how that manifested itself, and we're going to see different also, I guess, practical applications of what that means for us in our daily lives. So what I want to start with in this packet is a story. And this is a story that I actually just read recently. My daughter Elisheva just graduated high school. And as part of, you know, probably every graduation service everywhere, the girls are given some kind of a book or some kind of memento from the school as a goodbye present. And she just actually received this book, and it's called, it says on the bottom, the full name of it is The Glittering World of Chesed. It was written by Rabbi Pesach Kron. So Rabbi Pesach Kron, famous speaker, author, lots and lots of really, really wonderful, wonderful books, stories that I've used here and in other classes that I've given. His wife happens to be Elisheva's teacher as well. And Elisheva got the book, and, you know, being that she's a senior, pretty glad to be finished school. Says, Ma, here's a book. It's for you. Like, thank you. That's very sweet. You know, she regifted it to me, and I was excited to read it. And as soon as I saw this story, I realized right away where we were heading with this, and I was actually had to thank her because I'm learning Hakaras HaTov, gratitude for giving me this book so that I could share the story with you. So the story actually, it was important because it quotes a source in the Gemara, which is the same topic that we're doing here. So the story is actually told about the Rosh Yeshiva of Yeshiva Shara Yosher Rav Yosef Rosenblum, who told this story about the Rif, a famous rabbi, he told this story to Rabbi Krum. So basically there is a chazal, there is a quote in the Gemara that's on page 186. It says, Beira deshisa mimene lo tishte bekela. Do not throw a clod of earth into a well from which you drank. So it's the same idea, a well which serviced you. You had some kind of benefit. You were thirsty. You were dehydrated. It provided you with your needs. You should therefore not stuff it up. You should be thankful for that water source that you had, and you should make sure that you treat it properly. That is to say, if you were able to quench your thirst from the refreshing water of a well, it is improper to treat it with disdain. One must show respect and dignity even to an inanimate object, especially if it has served you in any way. It is for this reason that Moshe Rabbeinu could not hit the water before the plague of blood and frogs, for the water had saved him as an infant. Nor could Moshe hit the earth before the plague of lice, for the earth protected him as it covered the body of the Egyptian whom Moshe slew after the Egyptian struck a Jew. On this Gemara, the Shita recounts the episode of the Rif, who became very, very ill. He needed constant, warm, soothing baths, and a neighbor had just this type of bath. He invited the Rif to move into his home and make use of the bath whenever he needed it and for as long as he needed it. The Rif indeed moved in, used the bath numerous times, and eventually he was healed. A while later, this neighbor fell on hard times and had to sell some of his possessions. One of the things he wished to sell was the bath. He asked the Rif to evaluate it so that he could not defraud a potential buyer. He wanted to make sure that he told the buyer how much it was actually worth so that it would be fair. The Rif declined because, I cannot rule on this bath or estimate its value, for I gained from it. Were I to underestimate or undervalue it, I would be showing disrespect and disregard for something that helped me, and that would be wrong. We see that even an inanimate object deserves our kindness and consideration. And then Rabbi Krohn goes on to give other examples. This goes on for our sidurim, our chumashim, our clothes, our car, even our secular books. When you are in shul, return the sidur chumashim we've used to their proper shelves so that they won't tear and end up in tatters. We often throw our clothes on the floor, we toss our food, we toss our belongings, we leave things haphazardly. But he's telling us that maybe it would be something that we can just pay a bit more attention to and a little bit more of a focus on as a way of training ourselves to notice and to feel gratitude for something that has helped us in some kind of a way. And then he tells a cute little incident. Here's a confession of sorts. As a youngster, I played many sports, especially baseball. Shooting a basket becomes a challenge from any sort of angle of the court from a distance. When this becomes your mindset, you do not just toss a piece of paper in a wastebasket. You shoot it from a distance and see if it goes in, and it becomes victorious. And as a teacher in a classroom, I've seen that too, where, students will be writing, they'll make a mistake, they'll be finished with a piece of work, toss up their paper into a little ball, and it goes across the classroom. Sometimes it makes it in, sometimes it doesn't, but it's a lesson in restraint, I suppose. My kitchen table is a few feet away from the sink. To challenge myself, I would take my used fork, spoon, or knife and flip it into the sink with a flare and a clang. I realize now that maybe that was incorrect. If one facilitates this eating with silverware, he should show kindness and respect to the spoon, the fork, and the knife. They each serve me during the meal, and I must serve them in return, just as the Rif did with the bath. So again, it's not something that's required. It's not something that we must do. It doesn't mean that we can't sometimes feel a little bit light and, a little bit having fun. But again, it's just a sensitivity that we are making ourselves aware of, even to something which has no feelings and has no recognition. He then tells a story of Rav Mordechai Schwab, who was a very great rabbi. He lived in Muncie, New York. And he said that when this man's son tells the story, that when his father wore a suit, he didn't just throw it away. What he would do was wrap it up nicely and keep it in a drawer. Before he threw it away immediately, he would put it away, keep it on a safe place, and then after some time had passed, he would say to the suit, you know, thank you, you have served me well, and then put it away in a proper way. And again, you know, Rabbi Krohn, you know, with his humor says, I'm not suggesting that you talk to your clothes or to your objects. You know, somebody might start to wonder more about you than the object. But again, just a sensitivity towards the things that we have and how grateful we are. And I guess just now, you know, with the packing and with the downsizing and consolidating as I'm going through my house and looking at all of these things that have served me well in the past, and some things won't be able to make the journey with me that I have to, you know, leave behind or give away. And just, you know, it makes you realize just how much benefit and how much we have gained from even a dining room table, a chair. We think about all of the yontifs that we had at this table, all the suppers that were served, the guests that we hosted, the people that sat at the chair. And it's hard to get rid of it. It's hard to give it away because there's so much meaning in that chair. It's not just any chair. That's the chair that we had guests on, and that's the chair that people who meant so much to us and were part of our community, and we hope everyone will come visit us. We'll sit on, you know, either that chair or on our new chairs again. But again, we're just grateful for all the things, and it just making me just more aware of all the things that I have and how many things I have and how grateful I am for the things that I have and the you know, the pleasure and the mitzvos that I was able to do with the things that I have, and, you know, be able to take at least, you know, I can take, you know, all those belongings with me, but hopefully, you know, the memories could come with me and all of the, you know, the mitzvah portion of it that will last me forever will be coming along and moving with me to a new location. So I want to skip now. I have my different footnotes here are numbered. I don't think they're not numbered in your book. So I'm referring to what I'm calling as number 14. I'm gonna just flip through here and find it, and then I'll guide you as to where you can come up with it too. Okay, so number 14 is, oh my gosh, how are we going to count this? Okay, there's a page, it looks like, well, yours doesn't look like that. It doesn't have all the writing on it. But on the top right corner, there's a 98. It's probably, let's see if I can count here. I'm sorry that they're not numbered, but I did this after I made your copies. There's a bunch of English copies that have page 44, then there's a page 100, 242, 36.
Is it Hebrew or English?
It's a Hebrew page. It's on the back of an English page, that's page 36 and 37. It is from the Miftam Eliyahu, yeah. Okay. So they don't go in order. I mean, for me they do, but... Okay. So, 14. So this is taken from Miftam Eliyahu, written by Rabbi Dessler, and it is a Sefer, it is a book on Jewish thought and philosophy. So in the middle of the page, where I'll read through with you, but I'll be explaining, so you can feel free to follow along, feel free to take notes, or just participate in any way. So number 14 is in the middle of the page for me. Darga Rishona Bahakaras Tova. The very first level, the first step in recognizing the good in having gratitude. Hadarga Rishona Shel Hakaras Tova. Kinahi sheyeda v'yavin ha'adam she'alav lahachzik tova v'lu gam lahodos b'milim lefachos chalaf ma shechaveiro talach v'amal avodo. The very basic level of having hakaras hatov, of having gratitude, at the very basic, before we get into anything else, the first thing is that you must know and you must understand that we have to have thanks for somebody, and at the very least, the least that we can do for that person is to thank them for words, we using our mouth, to just say at least the words thank you as an exchange for what somebody did for us. Somebody went out of their way, Somebody helped us. Somebody provided something for us. We need to say thank you. Ulam tsar ha'ayin alul lomar shebechol zos ein chiyuv lahakir tova lahorim shetiplu v'hishkiu be'amtsaim rabim b'chinuch b'gidul yaldehem. There might be those who are more narrow-minded. They're more narrow-eyed. They're short-sighted. And they might think, well then, this might not apply to parents. Why should I have to thank parents who went out of their way and devoted so much energy, so much time, and so much into raising children? Hein hana'a miruba. They had benefit from this. They decided to have me. They had, you know, the joy of my birth. So why should I thank them? Yomar, hefiku ha'horim la'atzmam. Yes, it's true, maybe my parents worked very hard to put me through school, to make sure there was food on the table for me to eat, to provide me with those clothes and those camp experiences, but I brought them such joy, they should really be thanking me. Shekein HaKadosh Baruch Hu nata esteva ahavas habanim b'lev ha'horim. In fact, Hashem created the human with that natural tendency of love for a child and that wanting to do things for their child. So it was in my parents' inborn nature to do that for me. Kidei shelo yam isu b'tarchas gidulim. This is actually a benefit to us as the child that Hashem created that tendency within our parents to want to take care of us so that we would not be turned off by all the, you know, all the hardships of raising our children, right? There's something about no matter how monstrous our child is acting, when they look up at you with that face, we melt and we go at it again, right? No matter how many times that kid woke you up at night and you're ready to, like, you know, not really strangle your child, that's a bad word to use, but when you just really have had and you're ready to strangle yourself maybe, but when they look up at yourself, at you with that face, all of a sudden you melt, and it's as if it's totally worth it. V'imkein lima'an atzmam asu. And if so, they did it for themselves. Ba'asiyas tova luzulas shenaseis liman hanas atzmo. So why should I thank someone for doing a kindness for me, which they really did for them? Eina zaka'is l'dato l'toda v'hokaro. And that is something that somebody who would be, you know, short-sighted might attempt to say. Number 15, the next paragraph. Hakaras tova shlema. What is complete hakaras hatov? How do we fulfill that? Hatora doreshes hashkafa acheres legamrei b'ma'alas hakaras hatov b'chlal u'bekav kibud av ve'ein b'frat. In general, the Torah gives us different ideas and different insights as to how to go about having gratitude, specifically when it comes to our parents. And here is one of the reasons why I'm quoting this again, is because it's quoting the Chazal, it's quoting the Gemara that we used in our first story, which again is referred to as applying to Moshe. Bira jishasisa mena maya al tishdi bakela. Again, that same thing where if you were serviced by a well, don't stuff it up. Don't throw a rock into it. Don't throw a clod of earth into it. Chayoveinu behakaras hatov afilu l'domeim. We are required to have gratitude even for something which is inanimate. Af al pi she'eno toreach avureinu. Even though it did not extend any effort on our behalf. U'bevadai lo titachein bo kavana lehetiv. It certainly did not have any intention of doing anything good. It doesn't have any intentions at all. Chazal lamdunu bazeh. Our rabbis teach us from here. Shechiyuv hakaras hatov eino musana b'kib kavonosav b'tar chasav shal hanosein klal. What we can take on from this concept of having to have thanks for something which is inanimate is that this teaches us that regardless of what the intentions or directives or ideas of the person who provided a service for us are completely irrelevant to the depths of gratitude that we have to have. Ella shechovahi al hamikabel mishum kibul. We, as the receptor of a benefit, are automatically responsible in this gratitude. Vitzein lo, and we have to, and it's we're not excused from it. Ba'al ma'alas ha'chesed, shakol kulo chaduro b'shifa laseis ulhaanik luzulosov mikol asher lo. And there are people that are just givers and givers and givers, and all they want to do is give. And we can think of people that we know, that we've come across, that are just those type of people. People that will go out of their way to help people. And people that somehow manage to always be at the right place at the right time, providing the right kind of service. I think I've spoken about one of our friends like on many occasions. His name is Rabbi Perkel. We call him Swirly for short. So Swirly Perkel is one of the most generous people I know. He has connections to people like the most obscure connections, and they always turn out to be just what you needed at the right time. Several years ago, we were in New York for my sister's wedding, and it was Hurricane Sandy, and everything was threatening to be shut down, and indeed many neighborhoods got hit really, really hard, and we were concerned that the neighborhood we were staying in was going to be hit hard, and we wanted to make sure that we would have a backup generator for my husband's equipment. Should this happen, someone's like, just call Swirly. I'm like, hey, Swirly, what if we need a generator? He's like, don't worry, I have four. Like, okay, no problem. Swirly to the rescue. Thank God we didn't need the generator, but we knew who to turn to. I was having problems, you know, a few years ago when my husband became respirator dependent, you know, in his final years. We wanted to leave the hospital, but we were dependent on this respirator. We couldn't leave. I said, Swirly, find me a respirator so we could take him home earlier. He goes, well, I don't have one, but my next door neighbor does. I'll call him and see what we can do. It didn't end up working out for many reasons, but that's the kind of person who has generators, who has respirators, air conditioners, extra cars. My daughter's car broke down. She needed a car for work. And was like, just call Swirly. Yeah, I have a few cars on my driveway. The key's in the ignition. Go pick one. What do you mean? Like, these are people, like, and that. So these are people that Misugola Hargish Bechol Tova Kitana Shekibel. And these are kinds of people that, you know, they recognize all kinds of goodness that they receive from other people. But you're sad like Moltova Tachas Tova. And they want to give and to give and to give. Vishtadel Lahsir Gam Yoser Mimasha Kibel. And he's the kind of person that anything you do for him, it's irrelevant because he's always wanting to do more and to do more and to thank you for it. He is the kind of person that he's giving you like generators and cars, but he'll be the one to thank you for, I don't know, holding the door open for him, for some kind of minute thing. They're just those kinds of people out there. Ulafanchos yavi todaso bepemale. At the very least, you get this effusive thank you like you just went to the ends of the world. Libo yismale hakaras tova mishum etem havodasha kibel. Not because there was any effort, not because, well, yeah, oh my gosh, I really need to thank that person because that took an entire afternoon, or because they went out of their way. Just because somebody did something for me, that's it. I know I need to thank them, that's it. Not for any reason. I don't have to start thinking about, do they deserve for me to thank them? Gam lo im bechlal haytachein alav. Okay, tzadol shema asazos, and without trying to think, well, maybe he did it for me because I once did for him, so I don't really have to thank him because it's his way of thanking me, and all kinds of rationalizations. Af im nehanu hehorim ve'etzem tipulam v'gudulam shel hayiladim. So even if, as parents, our children, we benefited from our children, or as children, our parents benefited from us, ein ze goreya b'muma. This is nothing. This does not take away one iota from how much we have to recognize and thank parents. Believe me, da ugivol, without measure and without limit. Hein kivel mehem rov tova. They may have received good. Kol tochen chayehem nasnulo, but for their whole lives they gave over. Ba'al yadam balo hakol, and because of them we got everything we have. Should we not, therefore, as a result of this, be thankful for every day of our lives? And I remember, I don't know, probably in my early years of being a parent, one of my kids giving me a whole runaround. I can't even remember at what point or what it was, but I remember calling my mother and saying, Ma, I am so sorry. Thank you for everything you have done for me. Like, it takes until like a certain step to realize what our parents have done for us. Amru Razal, our rabbis teach, Bizman she'adam mitza'er es aviv es imo, at a time when a person is causing distress to their parent, Amar HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Hashem says, Yafe asisi shelo darti b'nehem, it would be better for me if I was not including myself with them. She'il malei darti b'nehem si'aruni, because had I dwelt with them, had I been with them, then they would have also caused me distress. So what the rabbis are teaching us here is that there is a correlation between how one relates to their parents and how one relates and treats Hashem. Because when we are put into this world, our role in this world is to become closer to Hashem and to use the world and the other people in the world and the events in the world to help us make that connection to Hashem and to use those experiences to learn from in our role of how we should relate to Hashem. So the parents, having parents, is our practice training ground for our relationship of being thankful to Hashem for what He does and what He provides us for every single day. So Hamitza'er es ho'rav, someone who causes distress to their parents. Again, we're talking about regular, healthy situations. We're not going to go off onto, you know, extraordinary situations of, yes, there are times when, unfortunately, parents do not do what is expected of them or do fall short of what would be a reasonable expectation. We're not going to deal with that now. We'll just deal with in a normal, healthy relationship. Siman hu she'eno chash she'chayav lehefir lahem tova. If a person is causing distress to their parents, there's some indication there that this person is failing to recognize that he owes them gratitude. Kevan she'to'ein bilibo. Once he starts making all kinds of tainos, all kinds of excuses, and all kinds of rationalizations in his heart, shaharei la'anasam he'mechuvanim, that really they're doing all this because of their benefit. I don't know anyone who purposely chooses to stay up all night. I don't know. But, you know, maybe you could rationalize that there are people that like to stay up all night and thrive on no sleep, and I don't know. It's possible. Ho reinu chazal. Our rabbis have taught us. Be'omet binosam, that from the great wisdom of our teachers, shamito hashkafa zu, that from this philosophy, chayas v'shalom, olul hu lakshov, kimo kein she'eno chayav l'chabet u'lahavo es HaKadosh Baruch Hu. That if a person doesn't use the training ground of his parents to recognize what they've done for him and comes up with excuses of why he can rationalize that he doesn't have to thank his parents, that same mindset will also cause him to rationalize why he doesn't have to thank Hashem for all that Hashem has given him. Alul hu lit'on. This person will come and end up making excuses and rationalizations. Kevan she'HaKadosh Baruch Hu bara es ha'olam. When Hashem created the world, es habrios, the creations, es chrisono seyem me'ovehem, when Hashem created people in the world, He created everybody with certain things lacking, with certain positive traits, with certain negative traits. We all have our makeup. Me'ha'ra'oi she'yitav yachmol al ma'aseh yadav. Hashem created us so that He would have mercy on us. V'yaspik es kol tzarchayim. Hashem put us in this world because He wants to give to us and to provide for us. Gam hare lo shayach etz al kadosh baruch hu torach v'amol. So Hashem created the world. He put me in it because He wants to provide for me. And besides, if God is God, then what sweat is it off of His back to be able to provide for me? He's not doing anything. There's no effort. V'lo chiser mi'atzmo klum. And if God is omnipotent and omnipresent and omni-everything, then by Him giving to me, He lacks nothing. He still has everything that He started off with. Im kein, if so, therefore, lama michuyav lahakir lo tova. So if that's the case, Hashem is doing it for His own benefit, for His own good. He lacks nothing. He gets the benefit. Why thank Him? Lidei hashkafa mushpesha zo alul lavo tsar ha'ayin sherechok mimidas hachesed. Again, this short-sighted person, this narrow-minded person, if he's thinking along these waves, then this person is actually causing himself to become further and further from the inborn trait of chesed, of compassion and of kindness. Lachain eino margish shekibel ela mizeh sha'amal v'tarach avuro. Therefore, because he is so distant from the concept of kindness and doing for others, he can't understand that. A person who has that kindness ingrained in him and is a kind and giving person will be the first one to notice when the kindness is done. But if you're removed from it, it's so foreign to you that you don't even think about that a person's doing a kindness. You're already being, like your warnings, there's antennas that are already up that this person is doing it for themselves, or that there's some benefit for them. You can't fathom in your own mind that the person is doing it out of the genuine goodness of their heart. Ve'eino misugo litfos es gadluso chastei Hashem yisbarach. And therefore, he is going to come so far that he won't be able to recognize the great things that Hashem does for him. Umimela richukhu melahodosbo ulavdo. And that's going to cause the person to get further and further away from Hashem, further away from thanking Hashem, and for recognizing everything that Hashem has done for him. And that is why in the next paragraph there is a chazal that says, Kol hakover b'tovaso shel chaveiro, anyone who is kofer in the tova, in the goodness. So the concept that we're talking about today is hakaras hatov, recognizing the good. The opposite of that, like the negative character trait of that, is kafoy tov. Kafoy tov is not recognizing it, or denying, rather, like a better word would be denying the good that somebody does for you. So anyone who denies the good that somebody does for them, libasof kofer b'tovaso shel HaKadosh Baruch Hu, it's going to cause them to deny that Hashem has done any kindness for them. Mi shechaser lo b'midas hakaras hatov hashleima klapei chaveiro, somebody who is lacking in showing gratitude to their friend, chaserim lo hakelim lahakir b'tuvo shel HaKadosh Baruch Hu, this person is lacking in the ability to able to thank Hashem from everything that he does for this. And then we skip down a little bit to the end, because it's a one-for-one ratio. It's a parallel. Just as I recognize to a person that I have to, then it's to Hashem. And whatever the ratio, the measure that I recognize between humans, that's the same capacity that I have to recognize in Hashem and to thank Hashem. And that is why it tells us that there is a pasuk, Olam Chesed Yibaneh. The world, it's the last line on the page. The world was created, the world was built on, the foundation of the world is chesed, is kindness. And to recognize that Hashem built the world on kindness, and because of that, we need to act and to be like Hashem. Just like Hashem does kindness, we are required, and it continues on the next. It flips over. It's on page 100 now. We are required to recognize the good of others, to be like Hashem, to emulate Hashem. And having Hakaras HaTov is one of those ways that causes us and enables us to emulate and to be like Hashem. And it tells us, Mahu Rachum Afata Rachum. Just as Hashem is compassionate, we should have compassion. Just as Hashem is just, we should act justly. And again, this is all a training ground for our relationship with Hashem and how we should interact with other people and with Hashem. Ad heichon magia hakaras tova. The next paragraph, until how far do we have to go to show gratitude for another person? To what extent? How far? Heivaynu la'el es divrei razal. And it says above, that we are, again, that same pasuk, that same chazal is quoted about stuffing up the well. But there is another pasuk. It says, as part of this, it tells us, Ein ma'avirin al ha'ochlin, that if one sees food on the floor, or if one sees food in a place which is not appropriate for food to be, one should get up, and one should pick it up from the floor, and one should dispose of it properly. Again, the food is something, it's our sustenance, it's something that has given us energy, it has given us power, it has given us the nutrition that we need to be healthy. We need to show some kind of respect for it. And again, it doesn't have to be the apple that we ate. Certainly, we're not going to be the one we threw an ate an apple, threw the apple core on the ground, and walk away from it. If you see an apple core on the ground, if you see some Cheerios on the floor, whatever it is, something that, you know, my house is Cheerios, and you see Cheerios on the floor, whatever it is, you see it on the ground, and it doesn't, again, it's not something that necessarily you ate, but because we value an apple, because we value the sustenance that the food represents, and what it gives for us, it's again a way of training us, using the world as a training camp to perfect ourselves and to recognize that things which were done for us need to be treated with respect. And on the last few days of school, we have a very similar situation. The girls are pretty excited that school is over, and they're going through their notebooks, they're going through their papers, they're going through their desks, and they're uncovering all kinds of things, you know, the homework assignment from October that they, you know, that we didn't know about, you know, the test that was supposed to be signed back in January, whatever it is. And they're coming up with stacks and stacks and stuff. And I'm watching them. And as a teacher in the classroom, I know that I invested hours and hours into that test that they lost, into that homework assignment that wasn't complete, or whatever it was. And, you know, I shouldn't say only negative, into all the tests that were signed that they did well on, and all the homeworks that they did do. And they're looking at me, and they say to me, Mrs. Symes, what should we do with all of these papers? And the first time it happened, I guess, you know, back in, you know, one of my earlier years of teaching, I thought about it. I said, you know what, girls? And this has become like my standard answer. And now already the girls who have more than a year in a row, they already kind of know what to do. I said, I don't expect you to save everything that I taught you. Your parents will hate me for that, right? If I came home and you said, okay, you know, Mrs. Symes taught us, here's a box, you need to save all this. I said, I get that. I don't expect you to save everything. I said, in fact, you know, different people are more sentimental than others. You know, some of you might be attached to a particular subject. Some of you may be attached to a particular project, whatever it is. Get back to that in a second. I said, but regardless, what you choose to save and what you want to keep or what's meaningful to you, that's your decision. I said, I'm not going to tell you to save everything. I said, but just do me one favor. Just give me one, like, just a little bit of sensitivity. You probably don't realize how much effort goes into those lessons. Do whatever you want with it. Throw it out, put it in recycling, but wait until I'm not in the room. I said, you know, really, seriously, like, I worked hard on those papers. You don't have to keep them. But as a student, who, and the teacher is sitting in front of the room, you can't take a pile of papers in front of your teacher and go and just throw it out. A little bit of a sensitivity, a little bit of paying attention, of noticing that somebody worked hard on this, I'm not going to throw it out in her face. Even though I know what you're doing. That's fine, I get it. But it's a sensitivity for you. It's for you to recognize that you should just be a little bit removed. It shouldn't be done, you know, right directly in her face. And I just had Malka and Asna, my sister, I just had a whole house full of people for Shabbos. This past Shabbos, they came up to Ottawa. They're starting summer jobs this week. They have new jobs. This was the last time that they could come to Ottawa for a Shabbos before we move. And, you know, my girls, you know, went off to school. They got married. And there is stuff in their rooms, you know, stuff, boxes in their closet, boxes in the drawers. And I said to them, I said, girls, I'm telling you right now, whatever is here is yours. You can keep whatever you want. I have no problem with you keeping whatever you want, but you must go through it and you must take it with you. I said, I'm not going to have room where I'm going to keep all your stuff.